Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning, 11 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're joined today by Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and today Kingston Freeman Publisher Emeritus Ira Fussfeld. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Before we start the show, can I just say enough with the winter weather advisories?
We've had it. No, it's enough.
You know, it's April enough. 9th.
Yeah. I want to order plants. I want to start planting lettuce, and boy.
It's right. Keeping me off the golf course, which is physically not good for me, but mentally it is.
And it's good for all the other golfers who have to wait?
It's an exercise in futility for me.
So what's happening with Tiger? Is Tiger, have they started this thing yet?
Today is the beginning of the Masters.
Today is the beginning.
Yes,
I'm a big Tiger fan, you know.
You are?
No,
why is that?
I love him.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Because he's the only golfer
you know?
He's such a, in many ways, despicable person.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm for him. I like him a lot.
He does seem to have gotten his life together, but we'll see.
And we'll see if this comeback. Yeah. I mean, it's awfully tough to come back when you're at a high level and it's not working out for you.
Well, he's 39 years old. It's not as easy. And there's a lot of young kids out there who hit the ball farther than he does and who are not intimidated by him.
Yeah.
Well, he can do commercials. Like, I think there's one with Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, but he can't do commercials because he lost so many endorsements after his scandal with
all
the
hookers. Look, if there are other people like me.
Speaking as the woman of crowd, half of the audience for those commercials, yes, he's lost us.
Yeah.
You don't like Tiger?
No.
I also thought interesting,
like
yesterday they had the Par 3 tournament, which is a sort of a fun event, and the players bring out their families and wives.
Yeah.
And he brought his two little kids out.
Beautiful
and
children.
With them was his girlfriend, Lindsey Vonn. And on the one hand, I thought it was very nice that he's got this sort of semi-family unit. But something struck me odd about the girlfriend there with the two little kids as opposed to the wife who was...
Oh, no. Andrew Cuomo does that with his kids all the time.
Yeah.
They're always there.
I mean, you're entitled to it. Yeah. To a second life.
Besides, I believe his ex-wife is smashing his car somewhere, probably in the parking lot.
with a nine iron.
You know,
Lindsey Vonn is no
So the three of you don't like
either.
Him? The three of you don't like him and I like him?
I admire him.
I don't dislike him.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge
Well, he's
golf
fascinating
fan.
To watch. And, he's why people will tune in to watch this.
Sure. I love him.
But he's been a train wreck for a few years now.
Jack Nicklaus.
Had hole in one yesterday.
Yesterday on a par 3. So that's nice to see. At least, I don't know how many yards that was. But
About 130.
Okay. So
yes.
But
he's
a lot?
75 years No, but he's 75 years old.
Pretty
and,
cool.
And as we know,
he's the one I like. Yeah. He's always been a
he's
paragon.
An exemplary
he's a
figure.
Wonderful player. Too.
Yeah, I like a little bit more, you know, drama.
Let the record show that I did not introduce the sports element this morning.
Right. And by the way, he must like Kim Jong-un, who the current leader, I believe, of North Korea, who claims to have gotten 50 holes
yeah,
in one.
Yeah, right. Sure, sure. Yeah, sure.
Well, the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Now on to a more serious business. Now that a jury has convicted Boston Marathon bomber Zohar Tsarnaev, the same 12 people will decide whether he lives or dies. Tsarnaev was convicted yesterday on all 30 charges. He was found responsible for the deaths of three people who died in the bombings and the killing of a Massachusetts Institute of Technology police officer who was gunned down days later. Beginning next week, the same jury, the federal jury, will hear evidence from prosecutors on aggravating factors they believe make death the appropriate punishment. Tsarnaev's lawyers will present mitigating factors they hope will persuade the jury to instead sentence him to life in prison. In addition to the people killed, more than 260 others were injured with the pressure cooker bombings. So, we'll throw it out to the panel today.
Do you know whether this has to be a unanimous verdict by the jury?
It does.
Oh, it does?
I believe so.
Does it have to be unanimous if it's life in prison?
I think that the choice is death penalty
one or the
not.
Other.
Yeah, and if they don't get a unanimous decision, then it's not. And I don't know if they can do a hung jury. I don't want to speculate too much. I will say I do not believe in the death penalty, even a case as heinous as this. I'd like to just see them put this guy in jail and, you know, let him out and walk the courtyard 1 hour a day and the rest of the time put him in the clink.
Let me ask you this, Ira, just to keep it interesting. Suppose they execute him. Will you grieve?
No, certainly less so than in other death penalty cases because they admit and he admits that he did this. So there's no, you know, it's not like one of those death penalty cases where somebody might have been wrongly convicted. So in that sense, no, I won't grieve, but I think it says something poorly about us as a civilized society that we will do an eye for an eye and put someone to death. I just don't believe in it.
Now, Rosemary, are you positive that it requires a unanimous decision?
I believe I read it. I was just double-checking that now. If not, I'm sure a listener will call in. But I believe it has to be a unanimous decision. Even one, they convince even one person, it goes the other way.
It would seem to be fairly easy to do that.
The decision was so overwhelmingly pro-government. Every single count. I think they have a hard job, and the one thing I hope is that this means they'll put him on the stand. I would really like to hear him before he
can he be compelled in this phase to
can
go
he
on?
Be what? Can no, he be can't compelled. Be compelled, but it would be up to his defense attorneys.
Now, according to the New York Times, did a nice piece on this. The jury is already death qualified. That is, quoting here, only those who said they were open to applying the death penalty were allowed to serve on the jury.
That was part of the voir dire.
Some people may have wanted to be on that jury who might have fudged a little bit.
You mean lie?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now what about Oklahoma City? That guy got executed, right?
Yes.
And you heard there weren't huge protests all around the world about it, were they?
Listen, if you believe in the death penalty, then cases such as this are prime reason for the death penalty. I just happen to believe that the death penalty is society should not be murdering someone who murders someone else. Society should be just putting that person away and let them suffer in silence for the rest of their life.
Well, I intellectually agree with you. Intellectually, I'm opposed to the death penalty. But I certainly am not in the shoes, and neither are you.
Sure.
Of the people, the victims who lost loved ones, legs, and everything else.
Well, isn't that why one of the main reasons my Mike Dukakis didn't get elected president? Remember that famous question?
He let loose
at a debate, and somebody said, suppose your
somebody
wife was
raped,
murdered,
yeah.
And he gave a very academic answer as opposed to, I would want to strangle the guy. And sure, if it's somebody you know or a circumstance that you're involved with, you'd want to kill somebody. That's
which is why you
reaction.
Shouldn't be on the jury, why we have rules that prevent that sort of thing.
You should not be
personally involved when you're making these decisions.
And you are for or against the death penalty?
Totally against
okay.
it. And I think it's a victory for the terrorists if we do assassinate him. We've become like ISIS, killing people. Just like
what about all the people we kill when we go abroad to fight against ISIS? What, that isn't the death penalty when you bomb them and strafe them and drone them? Isn't that a death penalty?
I missed the connection here.
We're killing them. You don't think
we're killing who?
We're killing our enemies.
Execution by the state. Don't see the connection.
No, you don't. Either.
Although I'm certainly not opposed. I certainly am opposed to fighting wars in Iraq, for example, in Afghanistan. We have no business being. But
Massachusetts abolished the death penalty in 1984.
Right.
And they haven't executed anybody in almost 70 years. There's a poll out, or a couple of polls out, that say most people in the Boston area are for life imprisonment. Does that matter what the polls say in this case to you?
It only matters what those jurors say.
This is a
state and an area where they didn't want to bury the brother who died. They had to be shipped out of state. I mean, that's like barbaric that you don't bury a dead person. That's something out of Greek mythology, that you let the buzzards get at them. So people are not thinking straight, and I can understand why. It was a horrible thing that these guys did. But the state, aren't we supposed to be above that?
Alan might remember this. When Mario Cuomo consistently...
Because I'm old?
I'm sorry? Yes, because you're old.
Won't remember.
When Mario Cuomo was consistently speaking against the death penalty, I believe he said that there were only two countries in the world that had the death penalty, we being one, and I want to say China. I'm not sure if that's right, but the point was...
Well, it certainly
was
is
that,
right.
Huh?
It certainly is right that China...
Saudi Arabia has it.
Yeah, well, then maybe I'm wrong. It just seems to me he tried to make the case that there were just very few, and why are we the civilized American?
I think the word is industrialized society.
Yeah, maybe that's what
it
was.
I think that's what it was.
But doesn't a federal death penalty sentence automatically open this to many appeals?
Absolutely, which is also answers the question that I think one of your listeners wrote in the other day about, isn't it cheaper to just put this guy to death? And again, I'm relying on my memory with Mario Cuomo, who consistently said it's more expensive to put someone to death because of the amount of money that's spent during the appeal process as opposed to just putting them away and throwing away the key.
I think that there's a great quote in this New York Times piece from Michael Kendall, who's a former federal prosecutor, and he says, the big choice for the jury will be which is more cruel, life without parole for a young man or the death penalty. They'll pick whichever they think is worse.
Right.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen once you die, but we do know that if they life without parole is pretty darn cruel if you have no hope of getting out.
You look at Sirhan and Charlie Manson, who were two men who have spent Son of Sam, decades in jail. That's no gift.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. The email is roundtable@wamc.org. We will take a break, and then we'll open the mailbag.
Support comes from Redbud Development, collaborating with residential clients to design and build functional outdoor spaces that reflect their lifestyle. RedbudDevelopment.com. Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Peter Cetera with the Hudson Valley Philharmonic on Sunday, August 2nd. Tickets available Friday, April 10th. BethelWoodsCenter.org. And Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete, available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores. Manny'sOliveOil.com.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC.
I just call Alan a liar. Yeah, he's always saying on these shows, I'm against the death penalty. Right. And here he is arguing, and he always argues in favor of the death penalty.
No. I always try to put myself in the shoes of the victims and the victims' families. And I did that the other day with Israel, too. I said, I'm against the Netanyahu philosophy, but I don't live in Israel, and I'm against the death penalty. I said philosophically, I was honest about it, but I don't know what it's like to have lost a leg for the rest of your life, or to have your children murdered. I don't know that. So, and then you guys come back. It's always the same thing, like playing ping pong.
We always have the same argument.
Yeah,
you gotta come back. And
it's always during the break. The interstitial arguments always seem to spill out onto the airwaves. So I want you two to play nice, and let's open the mailbag.
Okay, open the mailbag.
You can have the outtakes as a premium
on
a fund drive.
Yes, a $1 million pledge would get you that.
Okay, so George, if we can get him here. I understand the jury deciding the penalty in the Marathon bombing case will be subjected to another round of display of the horrors of the aftermath of the bombing. Is this the kind of emotional pressure correct to use in persuading a jury? Panel opinions requested. Thanks.
Well, the idea is that you give the victims a chance for a public airing. This is definitely not for the defendant. It's for the victims.
Yeah, okay. Michael says, putting him to death is like releasing him to eternity. Lock him up and throw away the key with an hour of exercise in the yard. Let him think about it for the rest of his life. And Jay says, the only countries that still have laws allowing the death penalty are China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and the United States. We are the only G7 country on the list. If killing people is wrong, how can killing people that kill people be right? And that's from Jay. Irene says, Sirhan, and others sit in prison due to cover-ups and incomplete searches. Reopen those cases, says Irene. And Tom says, governing shouldn't be done by polls, and certainly not justice. Jack says, Alan, I think your analogy between the death penalty and the use of drones is dead wrong. The better analogy is between a defendant who is in custody with prisoners of war. We certainly do not, well, shouldn't anyway, execute them as long as they are under our control and cannot attack us again. When we use drones, supposedly, we are defending ourselves against those who still have the ability to attack, and that's from Jack in Olive Bridge.
Okay.
And Carl says McVeigh volunteered for death in the Oklahoma thing. And let's see here. Do we have more? We did that one. And Robert says, giving a terrorist the martyrdom he craves isn't victory for the good guys. However, much short-term visceral satisfaction. There may be life in a supermax prison. I can't read it because it's not, but it's a far worse punishment for such a person. And Rich says, do you believe the Boston Marathon bombing involved only those two brothers? Even the Oklahoma City bombing still draws questions. And by the way, as I said yesterday, there are still people who swear, even though we were all looking at the television, that those planes never hit the World Trade Center. So you'll always get, people like that.
Well, there was some interesting information in Oklahoma City that there was a third person, and they never followed through on that. That is a lingering. The investigation itself has this lingering question.
Somebody says, race nester. Yes, Tiger's despicable. I can't stand him. He was bad for golf. Runaway winners are boring. I want classic competition like Nicklaus versus Palmer with Player and Trevino lurking. That was great competition. Tiger was a darling and got most of the coverage, whether he was playing or not. I quit watching and following golf, unlike bandwagon fans like Allen.
Wow. But well said. But
what do you mean well said?
But if Tiger makes a complete comeback and wins, is that not a compelling story?
I'm an agnostic. I would agree that the competition, Jack and Gary and Lee Trevino, is preferable. But Tiger was so far better than everybody else that it became entertaining to see how many shots he was going to beat people by. I mean, he was beating people by 10 and 12 shots in tournaments that are normally decided by one or two shots. So that was what made it fascinating. He was so much better than anybody
else. But you still don't like him.
No, I don't like him because of what we learned about him in his life.
He fooled around.
Not only that, but he is just not a very nice person to the press and to the public. He's been trying to redeem himself. He's been signing autographs. He's been smiling.
I don't know what's so bad about being mean to the press.
That was my question.
You are frequently, so that would put you in the same. Yikes. So we'll call you Tiger Shartai.
I wouldn't mind.
Or Pussycat or Shartai.
I wouldn't mind.
That's a great question, though. Are big star
it's
athletes
hypocritical.
Are
Come
they
on.
Are they obligated to be nice
yes,
to the press? I say
fans.
No.
The fans are the ones who put them where they are. But they owe everything to their
yeah,
fans.
Yeah, but the press.
I don't interact with Tiger Woods.
The press is by extension.
There you go.
That's
how they get to
when
the
you
fans.
Go
into
Mario,
a, when you, whether it's a politician or a golfer, when you go into a press conference and Joe Smith of the Washington Times
he's
asks
trying
you
to destroy you with his
he's
questions.
Trying to ask a question that his readers are interested in. Readers are not in the press room. Reporter is in the press room.
And the press was really Tiger's friend. They knew what was going on and never asked him.
Much like our friend Barack Obama and some of other politicians, Bill Clinton, they got tremendous press, and then they became nasty to the press.
Right. So then you say, Ira, that Marshawn Lynch of Seattle then has an obligation to speak to the press.
Oh, absolutely.
Why?
It should be because he's speaking to the fans of the Seattle Seahawks.
The fans want to see him run and score touchdowns.
And they want to say to him, gee, how do you feel today, Marshawn? Well, how did
Who
you
cares?
Develop that?
Marshawn is interesting because his thing with the press is kind of a shtick. He actually does speak to the public quite a bit, does a lot of public work. I find him really interesting. It's not the same as Tiger at all.
I just think I want to ask you a question.
This has strayed from a more serious.
But I want to ask you. This is serious
stuff.
That's
the way it happens.
Because I want to know from Rosemary. I'm asking her straight out. This is Gunfight at the OK
you
Corral.
Have 30 seconds.
Do you really think that the press is representative of the people? I don't.
Absolutely.
Who elected them? They get ahead by destroying, by tearing down. That's what they
but
do for a living.
But you can't have 1,000 golf fans asking questions in a press conference. You have one reporter there or several reporters there asking the questions that they believe the public is interested in.
By the way, Ira was here last time, and I took heat because we talked about the NCAA. And now somehow it has become golf. And I swear to you at home, I had nothing
well,
to do with
this. Well, let the record show that Alan brought up Tiger.
All right, well, we're out of time.
Alan's stirring up trouble. Make him stop.
We're going to take a deep breath.
Pussycat Alan.
Make him stop.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. All right, everybody's relaxed now. We took a drink of water. It's the roundtable on WAMC. We've cooled down, took a deep breath. 9:33 on a Thursday morning. Rosemary Armeo is here. She mixes it up every day. Alan Shartok as well. Ira Fussfeld, on the other hand, only shows up every week or two.
Yeah, so I've got it all pent up in me.
I tell you.
You should hear me yelling back to the radio when I listen to you guys on days I'm not here.
When I'm not on, I do the same thing. I sit at my desk and they all say, shut up, will you?
Well, that's right. And you are very, very judge as Gerald Ford used to say, very, very judgmental.
Yeah,
and you know, you and your friend Brian Shields have things to say about my work.
Your work is great.
Now you say that.
So now let's check the mailbag, Al. What do we got?
Did you call me Al?
Oh, but you call
Alan. Him Al.
Marshawn Lynch started with the Buffalo Bills. He was such a total jerk, they ended up trading him to get him out of town. I would have benched him for his entire contract. No respect for him at all.
Okay.
That's just somebody checking in.
All right.
George says, sports reporting is nothing more than entertainment news. End quotes. Uh-oh. We spend far too much time and money covering sports, which really has little social importance. I don't care about celebrities' personal lives, and I don't think they have any responsibility to speak to the entertainment reporters who want to pry in their lives. You go, George.
All right, Ira, I think you should have a chance to respond to that. You were a sports reporter.
No, don't do it.
Yeah,
don't
let's
rise.
Just keep going.
Okay.
The people who pay their salaries and give them endorsements are the public, and that's why they have some responsibility to respond to the public through the press.
Well, and also there's a deeper underlying argument here, and that is that, as you know, Marx called the religion the opiate of the proletariat or something close to that. And I believe, and I have always believed, that sports does that same job and calms the waters. I think we probably have less important politics because we have sports.
I'm going to answer in one sense because Rosemary is going to peel over.
I'm not speaking
over.
Until we're on
the,
real news.
That is the way it used to be. Now, with the amount of money and crime and it's drugs all related to sports, it's become much less of a toy department, as they used to call the newspapers. The sports department was the toy department. No, the real life has invaded sports. It's not nearly as nice as it once was.
And big business as
yeah,
well.
And big business.
Well, fair enough. Okay. Akasha says, I'm personally against the death penalty for many reasons, some of which you've mentioned. One of the many tragic things is the victims who survive violent attacks and come away with deep anger. One of my cousin's friends lost his leg, among other injuries, in Boston. His anger has become a sickness, as it does for many. My fear is that in his or any victim's desire to see the perpetrator be killed, he will never be free. It is typically the case of survivors of violent crimes. So we lose yet another life by putting this kid, which I do see him as, to death. And Luke says, all the previous respondents have been wrong when it comes to how many countries utilize the death penalty. There are 34 on that list, and he goes into the 34.
Okay.
That's Luke. Let's see here. And Margaret says, even TV stars, book writers have an obligation to their fans. Dick Vitale lost it once and berated a fan who only wanted to shake his hand. The late baseball star Willie Stargell said you should be seeking the autograph of your fourth grade teacher. They are more important, he said.
Hear, hear. Well said, Willie Stargell. And thank you for making my life miserable in the 1970s as a Mets fan.
For the uninitiated, Willie Stargell was a baseball player for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
He killed
us. Just want to be clarify.
You know what? Sometimes you have to be tolerant.
Yes, you have to let people.
You
not everybody knows who Willie Stargell.
Not everyone agrees with you.
Do you know who Willie Stargell is?
I did.
Oh man.
All right, fine.
Oh,
we'll
man.
Move on.
Oh man. But now that you mentioned Pittsburgh, I want to bring something up.
Okay.
I just saw number 42 on HBO the other day for the 42nd time.
Okay.
And it was great. And they mentioned Branch Rickey, who was the owner, not the manager, which I said the other day. And he ended up owning in Pittsburgh. And the joke, the standing joke of the whole movie was anybody who was a racist got sent to Pittsburgh. And that's where he ended up. What do you
but
think
he
about
was
that?
Not a racist.
Oh, no, on the contrary.
Quite the contrary, right.
Quite the contrary.
All right, then. It's 9:38. It's the roundtable on WAMC. Rosemary Armeo is here with
grimace
on your face.
Contributing nothing.
What a prima donna. Also, really? Ira Fussfeld and Alan Shartok. All right. Here is the latest from North Charleston, South Carolina. Bystanders video proved pivotal in the filing of a murder charge against South Carolina police officer Michael Thomas Slager. And also rekindled a discussion about the use of body cameras by police officers. The White House seized on the case to make a pitch for wider use of such cameras. So did New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, whose city has experienced controversies related to police use of force. Also, the officer in question was fired yesterday. He fatally shot an unarmed black man in the back. The mayor of that city said that every uniformed officer on patrol will get a body camera. The mayor says the city's already ordered 101 cameras, ordering another 150 in the aftermath. We touched on this yesterday. Is this the way all police forces are going now? Will it be?
I hope so. I think it's a great thing, and I'm so enamored or respectful of whoever had the guts to take that that cell phone out and take those pictures. That's very tough. You put yourself in that situation. You're standing there. This guy's shooting somebody, and you take out a cell phone and you start to, you know, and you know how they're going to feel about that, and you have the guts to do it. Well, I think if you extend that concept to body cameras, you're going to see that it is going to take, it is going to influence the way in which people behave.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's I think the local officials in North Charleston have responded exactly the way they should. The only way I think that they can. And while that's we're praising that, how sad it is that we're praising what is seems like really standard behavior.
Yeah, except that there are other public officials who would have stood up in other places. And,
well,
you know,
we didn't see it, Alan, in Cleveland, in Staten Island, in Ferguson. We haven't seen it, so it's refreshing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
But as I've been saying to a police friend of mine, I started a debate on Facebook this morning. We had a journalistic failure that we spent a lot of time on the show talking about with Rolling Stone printing an article that proved to be false.
Yeah.
And it ruined only reputations. And yet there was a huge reaction to it among the good journalists. They sat and studied it. They wanted make sure this doesn't happen again. They didn't say, oh, it's just one bad apple. Cops need to do the same. Where are all the good cops saying, let's study what's going on here and figure out what's happening? I want to hear from all these. We keep reminding people how many cops are really great and we need them.
Sure.
They need to stand up and say, we are not in favor of this stuff. There's an awful lot of cases building up.
Yeah, and that
I don't know whether you said this. I'm sure I heard it somewhere, so I don't want to take credit for it if it makes any sense. But as it relates to the Rolling Stone thing, the one thing you can say favorably about Rolling Stone is that they did go out to an outside agency, an independent agency, to offer a report as to what went wrong. And I think we don't see that kind of thing in many, if any, other professions. Journalism is beats up on itself all the time.
Right.
But we don't see that much, if at all, in cases or in institutions such as...
And for listeners who are thinking, how dare we compare journalism to cops, that's exactly the point. They're dealing in life and death. So why not have the independent agency? We have much more at stake.
I just want to take some exception and be against you, Rosemary.
Oh,
well, you're the one who used that.
9:45 took that. A few minutes. With
time and time is flying. I'm saying that only because you said that only reputations were damaged. Well, you know, in the case of the magazine article, in fact, it was a lot more than reputations. It was women who were being raped around this country have suffered as a result of this. It's a terrible thing. It was a lot more than one fraternity or one lying victim.
I don't disagree, but there's no bleeding body with his hands pinned behind his back as a result of anything a reporter did. You cannot compare the importance of police work to the importance of journalism.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're right that it's a terrible, terrible thing, and I don't like it when we get into this as more important than that is, because I think that's, you know, silliness. But when you think of the whole credibility issue of rape victims around the country as a result of this, that's a pretty terrible thing that was done there.
Yeah.
Does anybody in the room feel as I do, or am I just being Pollyannish, that we seem to be at a tipping point in the country with incidents such as this? In other words, we've had now several in such a relatively short amount of time that and each one seems to produce more and more outrage and more recognition on the part of the authorities that something went horribly wrong, that the country is finally zeroing in on this problem?
Oh, I call Pollyanna on that.
Yeah.
How many times have we said that about shootings, you know, mass shootings? Oh, this Sandy Hook, that's the end. Now we'll see something. No, I don't believe
it. But this is a little different in that there is a documented, there is footage of this. Everyone has seen it, or almost everyone has seen it. This is entirely a more powerful and more in-your-face example.
Wait a minute. I think it's incredibly powerful, but you think it's more vivid than 24 tiny little bodies in Sandy Hook?
I don't think that's a comparison you can make in any way.
Yeah, that what we're talking about is whether there's outrage enough that there'll finally be action.
Yeah. Andrew Cuomo, by the way, in Michael Schneerson's new excellent book on The Contender about Andrew Cuomo, said the impression seems to be that he misjudged after Sandy Hook. He really thought this was going to help him politically, and people in upstate New York particularly got really nutty about this thing. And so, you know, the assumption that this will be the turning point is not always so.
Well, yeah, but I don't, I won't make the analogy between the Sandy Hook terrorist kind of incident or gun violence incident versus police.
No, no, no. That
violence.
There's no, no.
So that, yeah, that's what I'm separating
good,
that
good
out.
Good clarification. Yeah. And certainly I do not compare terrorism in a school to the police action. Simply the matter of have we reached the tipping point? Has it been such an outrage that now we'll have to do something? I don't believe that.
I mean, I was struck by the fact that the New York Times spread the South Carolina shooting and pictures all over the front page.
Well, they had the video.
They had the video,
that's why.
But the New York Times is not, quote-unquote, a crime newspaper. It's not usually one that will highlight those
kinds
of
things. The police stories right out of New York, though, they had the two cops who were killed.
Well, that was a local story, but I don't even remember that being as played as big as this one was.
Email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is here, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and yours truly, Ray Graff. We'll take a break, and then we'll see what's in the mailbag.
Support comes from Bullard McLeod & Associates, Albany, New York. For 30 years, offering financial planning and investment management services that focus on client objectives and are designed to preserve and grow wealth. BMAinc.net. Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York. Women-owned and operated with a combined 70 years' experience. Eye exams by appointment. 518-459-2638. And Oblong Books, presenting Mark Pizer and Tim Dwyer with their book Hissing Cousins, The Untold Story of Eleanor Roosevelt and Alice Roosevelt Longworth. April 11th at 7 p.m. in Rhinebeck. Oblongbooks.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's the Roundtable, don't you know? 9:46 on a Thursday morning. Alan Chartok is our mail reader. And do you have
M-A-L-E and M-A-I-L.
Right.
Is he the merry mailman? You're a little bit too young for that.
I know. You
let's just
remember,
hope he doesn't always ring twice. Yes. Just
You don't know the merry mailman? Used to be a kid's show.
Yeah. It
was, Ray Heatherton was the merry mailman.
Okay, so Sean says, good morning. A body camera would only be effective if officer had no control of the device. I'm not so sure that's true. So let's say there was something going on and the officer put his hand over the thing, I think, and you had regulations.
Well, that's
on
what
the
he's
police.
Saying. Yeah. It would only be effective if the officer could not do
yes,
that.
But I am saying the counterargument to that is if you see the officer put his hand over his camera at that point, his bosses would have the ability to say, what'd you do that for?
I do think that those technical details could be worked out fairly easily.
You don't want a Rosemary Woods situation.
Yeah.
I remember that.
You remember that.
Joe says, cruel and unusual punishment is unconstitutional, yet we are arguing for a decision process that hurts the criminal the most. Punishment should be measured for its deterrent effect. The Boston bomber case is unique in that the death verdict feeds into the Muslim concept of martyrdom. Mario Cuomo called it vendetta. Corey says, what is amazing to me in all of these videos of police violence is how quick many people are to explain it away by saying they're bad apples in every bunch, but how many supposed good apples are seen standing around that bad apple watching them beat up or shoot a citizen. I think you made that point, Rosemary.
Yes.
There is a culture of war infecting policing, and much of it is not their fault. We give them military equipment for free, tell them to go fight a war on drugs. In that scenario, everyone is suspect. And Mark says, good morning. Rosemary is 100% correct about the good cops needing to come forward and speak up.
Uh-huh.
The fact that they are not suggests the police have a blue wall of silence and that they protect their brotherhood, whether right or wrong. That in itself is a frightening thing for the public. And in fact, we have seen specific cases of cops who did tell the truth and who ended up with a bullet in their brain and other things.
Well, as, most famous being Serpico.
Serpico, yeah. Right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sean says, a body camera, oh, we did that one. And Allison says, okay, several stories have come across the blogosphere showing that the news reports of the South Carolina shooting would have been there if there had been no video. And yes, brave person who took that. This says to me that the press is altogether too gullible in swallowing police reports of these incidents. Disgust. And then there's a fairly long letter. I'll try to do it justice.
Okay.
No?
No, do it, yeah. Sure, yeah.
From Ray. I wonder how Sonara feels about the death penalty. He expressed a desire to become a martyr like his brother in his manifesto while hiding in the boat, but he doesn't seem to be raising objections while his lawyers fight to save him from the death penalty. While I wouldn't object to him being executed, I feel it is far worse punishment to serve life in prison under restrictive conditions at a supermax prison like Florence, Arizona. I'm also concerned that imprisonment in solitary confinement may be found to be a form of torture and deemed unconstitutional, which would give him access to other prisoners' letters, families, and friends.
All right.
And one of the great things about Ray, says Marjorie, that Ray does when he's the host is cut off the musical interlude in order to get back to the much more interesting part of the show.
At times more interesting.
And he'll cut that off nicely when it falls off the rails. Thanks, Ray.
Well, there you go. And, that's what I do.
So now we get into it. Race the star. So disappointing skiing star and darling took Lindsey Vonn took up with a despicable guy like Tiger.
I don't like Lindsey Vonn.
Why?
Really? Because she was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and yeah. She is a supreme athlete, and she let them encourage them to film her with her butt sticking up in the air and tight lycra. Inside she's in bikinis. And so do we need more of the swimsuit issue in Sports Illustrated?
I tell you,
sexist.
There's
it's
a lot
awful.
Of that going around. The current issue of Golf Digest has has a picture of Lexi Thompson, a very bright, young, very good golfer with nothing on but a towel draped around her front.
Yeah, I saw that. Ridiculous, yes. Very sexist, and I'm sorry, just because the woman allows it doesn't mean it's right for the media to do it. It's sexist. We don't.
I mean, I would have been happy to pose similarly, but some reason
you know, I don't think that's a great idea, Ira. And thanks for putting that image in our head. We appreciate it very much.
I'm a big Lindsey Vonn fan, and I don't care what you say. And I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with looking good in our society. I know I do. So,
a man who describes himself as a feminist. I just point that out.
I am a feminist. And I believe that you're telling me, Rosemary, that every person who poses as a model is anti-feminist?
Well, I wonder if Lindsey Vonn considers herself a feminist.
Every athlete, no, she doesn't.
Are you sure?
Yes. Every athlete who allows themselves to be belittled that way, to allow her body to be shown.
Well, how about all the models?
Skill.
How about all the people on the runway?
Well, I don't care for them either, but that's a whole different thing.
Well, okay. And how about all the TV actresses? All those people on Law and Order and everybody else who look good. Are you telling me that they shouldn't be allowed?
I'm stopping this now.
I think that's a really,
argument.
Really, really good idea.
Ad infinitum.
What's a good idea? To stop that whole...
Well, no, she started it.
Okay, well,
we're
going to
continue this outside, Aaron. Okay. I'll see you outside.
She started it.
Okay. Check, please. All right, listen. This is a new segment of the program that I just invented. It's called Rosemary's Choice. I'm going to throw out four topics in the news, and Rosemary will get to choose. All right,
not
you ready?
Fair.
Here we go. Well, you know what?
Lady's choice.
She's in a mood today, and so I'm going to just placate her. Here we go. Why NASA's top scientist is sure that we'll find signs of alien life in the next decade is the first
boring.
One.
There's a lot of water. Bob Berman can have that one.
Hackers claiming ISIS ties seize control of French network TV5. Apparently, they are canceling all Jerry Lewis movies. No, I don't know.
Well, you're making light of a serious topic, but what else is there?
CBS News' Bob Schieffer to retire.
Big,
sad,
big
but he's an old guy.
Right,
no. That's
before.
For media.
All right, this is the last.
He's the only one out there right now who I would say is America's anchor. As opposed, he's more Walter Cronkite.
That's true, but
than,
anchors are added. No, last one.
All right, the last topic that we have here in the final minutes of this, the blessed final minutes of this hour, from the New York Times: sex education in Europe turns to urging more births.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's one I want.
We're going to go with sex. All right. So let me set this up for you. I'll quote here from the New York Times, piece by Danny Hakim. 25 Danish 13 and 14-year-olds gathered in a circle to talk about sex. This was going to be awkward. One student surveyed her red nails while a classmate checked his cell phone. When the discussion turned to self-pleasuring, a girl pointed across the room toward a boy who was already chortling, and then she started to cover her own giggles by cupping a hand over her mouth. Now, the point of this is the
That's called an anecdotal lead in journalism, where it's like, what the heck are they
talking
about? Well,
the point of this is, in Europe, the birth rates have stagnated to the point where it is an aging population. So the idea, at least in Denmark and some other places, they've talked so long in sex ed about how not to get pregnant, they thought maybe now is a good idea to talk about how you get pregnant.
And by the way, China has the same problem. They are now changing the one-child rule.
So it's this incredible paradox that the Earth is overburdened by humans, and so you have people calling for population control, and yet societies are set up with institutions that fail when you have too many old people and not enough young people being born. Japan is in crisis. Europe, including Denmark, is in crisis. The United States is headed that way.
You know, I don't know if it's apocryphal, but in this New York Times piece, it says, Japan already faces existential questions in a country where adult diaper sales are beginning to eclipse those of baby diapers.
That's right. So the problem in some countries, you have 100, for every 100 young people you have, people of working age, you end up with 68 people who are pensioners. So that 100 workers cannot support them. They just cannot physically do it.
Exactly.
So there's this terrible paradox that we have institutions based on growing populations when our planet cannot really handle more humans.
That's really good, Rosemary.
It's a really good, clear explanation of the problem. Yeah.
Is it interest you that this story, headlined Sex Education in Europe Turns to Urging More Births, is in the international business section?
That's a great point, Ira.
No, but it is. It's all based on worker productivity. Social Security is. This is the same thing.
Sure.
That's why Social Security is in trouble. You don't have enough workers putting in money for the pensioners that exist to take out. And that's happening on a global scale. In the developed countries, not in Africa and Asia and the more developed, still developing countries.
Well, wasn't the original point about urging or hoping that there would be less of a population explosion for all of the reasons that it's problematic that there are too many people in the world? So that now, are they if that's in fact the primary reason for this, if they're now saying, no, we've got to have more people in the world, are they not forgetting where we started? In other words, if there was 4 people born today and we want only 6 people born today, we only want 2 people born today, but it was down to 1, nothing wrong with going back to 2 or 3, but we don't want 4 again.
Exactly. And here's another paradox that goes into this. I love this story.
Yeah.
In any time that you have a country that develops, that goes from poor to richer, as China is now, as Brazil is now, the birth rate drops. And that's because women get involved in the workforce, they get involved in education, so they're not at home having 9 babies as they are in Uganda, for example. That's the average birth rate. So you have fewer children, population drops. So it's the countries where that are most in need of dropping population, they're increasing, and the other countries like ours that are developed, we could support more, it's falling.
Putin's Year of the Family in 2008. Yeah. Did you read that little bit about what he did? So they employed touches like a curving park bench designed to get couples to slide closer together. How uniquely sort of a communistic approach to things, you know?
Although in Bosnia, there are benches all over the parks there because it's a poor country and young people don't have places to go to as we do here.
They don't
go
get a
hotel
room.
Can't get a room. Their parents already have other kids living with them there.
No.
So they go into the park benches. Park benches
for
are
a little
kind
hey
of important.
Hey. Oh, yeah.
Well, absolutely.
Hey, hey.
Well,
yeah.
I would just observe that since you gave Rosemary the opportunity to select this story about births, that it makes it Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. I wish you'd waited 30 seconds.
Had I foreseen that.
Even I have avoided that all this time. It's obvious.
I know. That is a line like you would have given usually.
No, it's not up to my standards.
It's just too obvious.
You got enough water, Ira?
Now, Ira.
Because otherwise we'll get someone to fill up Ira's glass. You see.
How do you know this is water?
Ira's glass. That's cute. That's up to your standards.
It's called Filling Time here on the Roundtable. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. About 30 seconds left. Anything in the mailbag, Alan, you want to read?
There's tons.
Go, Daddy-O.
I can't even begin.
All right, then
Good morning. What a fantastic and important discussion. It is the heart of just about every political and social challenge. The great taboo subject for all the reasons you mentioned.
Population.
Who are you going going to push off the debt and degradation to if there aren't more and more people. Judy says, I appreciate Rosemary's loud and clear voice pointing out that ongoing sexism in our society. But why in the world is she so ageist? I don't like it one bit.
Oh, boy.
Please stop dissing and dismissing old people, Rosemary.
Ouch, man.
And John says, I think the historic moment of that video cannot be underestimated, obviously, of the shooting. And already the fear that the man who took the video has for him and his family is a matter of public discussion.
I think that's... Oh, you want to finish that one up? We have
okay.
about 10 seconds.
He's been interviewed and says he has no regrets. Mr. Scott did not deserve to die. John.
All right. Thanks to Ira Fussfeld for being here and for the hilarious joke you ended it with. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Shartok, Ray Graff here for Joe Donahue. Hour number two of the Roundtable on the way.